what. Maybe Brody was right. These wetlanders might decide to trade him to the Empress in an effort to make her go away. They might believe they had no other skin in the game. Evan had to convince them otherwise. Once Celestine realizes that Jenna is still alive, she will conquer the wetlands, realm by realm, until she finds her. If you want to defeat the Empress, you are going to have to join together. If you don't, she will win. Ask the survivors of Chalk Cliffs. He paused. Do you think there's any chance of that, joining together? It won't be easy, the healer said. There's too much blood on the ground already. And there will be more. You can count on that, Evan said. What about you? Why are we having this meeting? What are you hoping for? The healer held his gaze for a long moment, and then, somehow, chose to trust him. You've heard people speak of a Captain Gray, he said. Evan nodded. He was at Chalk Cliffs, he said. Everyone seemed to be worried about him. She was at Chalk Cliffs, the healer corrected him. Captain Gray is my sister, Alyssa, the heir to the Grey Wolf throne. We believe that the Empress took her captive, and that she is now somewhere in Carthus. I intend to go after her, and I'm going to need your help. Chapter 27 Setting the Trap. When it came to political intrigue, Hal Matalon had one thing going for him. By now, he had a network of men he could trust with his life, men he'd fought alongside on multiple battlegrounds in this never-ending war. He was counting on that now to help him find his brother. On the downside, his was a well-known face in Arden's court, even after a year away, since he'd spent most of his winters at court. So he sat in the corner of the tavern, collar turned up, face turned away from the lamp, hoping that he wouldn't be recognized. The last thing they needed was another Matalon held hostage by the boy king. He was all but positive that Robert would have come here to Arden's court to hunt for their mother and sister before the Thanes marched on the capital. Hal heard the door bang open and shut as someone new came into the tavern. The newcomer, dressed in military garb, stopped at the bar to make inquiries. Now he walked purposefully toward Hal's table, bringing with him the scent of the spring evening. Hal tensed momentarily, then relaxed when he recognized him. It was Eric Bellamy, the son of the Master of Horse at Arden's court. Though Bellamy was a year or two older than Hal, he'd served under him for several years in the field. Only now, Hal noted, he wore a captain's braid on his shoulders.
"Sir, I'm told you have a message for... saints and martyrs!"
Bellamy stared at Hal as if he'd been raised from the dead, then made the sign of Malthus.
"Shh, sit down," Hal said, waving him to a seat.
Bellamy sat, nearly stumbling over the table leg. He seemed to be afraid to take his eyes off Hal, as if he might lunge at him and suck out his soul if he did.
"But, Captain, I heard you were dead, that you died at Delphi," Bellamy hissed.
"No, not dead yet," Hal said.
Bellamy looked around to see if anyone was close enough to have heard.
"You shouldn't be here," he whispered. "What if someone sees you?"
"I'm hoping it will help that nobody will be looking for a dead man," Hal said.
He signaled for the server.
"What'll you have?"
"Small beer," Bellamy said. "I'm on duty in a little while."
He paused.
"On second thought, I'll have bingo. A double."
Hal put in the order and turned back to Bellamy, who was studying him with narrowed eyes.
"You look like you've put on some hard miles since I saw you last, sir," he said. "When's the last time you had a good meal?"
"I just ate an entire lamb pie," Hal said, pushing his empty plate back. "And I'm seriously considering having another. I've been in a northern prison, where food is hard to come by."
"How'd you get away?"
"The guards got tired of losing to me at Nicks and Bones," Hal said. "So they let me go."
"Right," Bellamy said skeptically.
He paused, as if groping for something to say.
"I've never seen you with a beard before."
Hal fingered his chin, still thickly forested with a black stubble.
"Enjoy it while you can. What are you up to these days?"
Bellamy rolled his eyes.
"I've been working with my Da over the winter, trying to teach new recruits from the Down Realms which end of a horse is the front. When I'm not doing that, my mother is trotting me around to parties, hoping I'll meet some rich widow. There's a shortage of dance partners at court, since so many of the thanes have taken the field against the king. Those that aren't are staying away, for fear of being here when the thanes sack the city."
"Could be your golden ticket," Hal said dryly.
"Ha," Bellamy said. "The widows I fall for are always penniless."
"Two penniless widows," Hal said, raising his glass in a toast. Bellamy laughed, but quickly sobered.
"If fortune finds me, it'll be because I've been a good soldier."
Hal nodded toward Bellamy's new signia.
"You've done well, Captain." "I'm up for colonel now," Bellamy said, then colored. "You're the one who's earned it. I just don't get why..."
Hal raised his hand.
"Congratulations, Colonel. Guess I'll have to get used to calling you sir." "I may have reason to regret this promotion," Bellamy said. "Now that it's looking to be a two-front war, they're in need of more sacrificial officers. Rumor has it that I may lead our forces in the north while General Khan deals with the Thanes."
He stopped, then, as if realizing that he might be giving away tactics to the enemy.
"Everybody says the rebels are going to march on the city any day now. But maybe they won't, since you're here."
He looked sideways at Hal, as if hoping he'd confirm or deny.
"I haven't seen my father since I came back," Hal lied. "I leave the politics to him."
Bellamy sighed.
"I hate this, sir. I'm glad to go north, so I don't have to take the field against my friends."
"We're soldiers, Bellamy," Hal said, shrugging. "We follow orders. Listen, the reason I asked to meet with you is that I'm looking for my brother, Robert. We were together at Delphi, but he left for Temple Church before the city fell. I'm hoping he's all right. Have you seen him? Do you know where he's posted?"
"Robert? Haven't seen him,"
Bellamy said, shifting his eyes away, staring down into his glass.
"You're sure he's not with your father?"
"He's not at White Oaks," Hal said. "I know that for a fact." He waited one heartbeat, then two, for Bellamy to speak up. Then he planted his hands on the table.
"Now, be straight with me. What have you heard?"
Bellamy began picking at a scab on his wrist.
"I told the truth when I said I haven't seen him. But I've heard he's been in and out of taverns and barrack houses for the past few days, asking a lot of questions about where the king might be holding prisoners. I went looking for him. I was going to sit him down and tell him to quit this foolishness and go home. But it always seems like I'm a few steps behind. One thing I'll say for him, he moves quick, and he doesn't lay his head down in the same place twice."
Hal swore. Robert was as subtle and stealthy as any charging bull. It wouldn't take long for the blackbirds to catch wind of this, but if Robert found out Hal was here looking for him, he'd go deeper underground than ever. The city was too big, and the situation too dangerous to be playing hounds and hares. But he had to try.
"Tell me he's using a fake name, at least," Bellamy laughed. "He's calling himself Cordray." That was the name of their old tutor.
"Could I ask for a favor?"
"You can ask," Bellamy said with a sigh. "Just remember, I'm not the hero you are. King Gerard was a cold, ruthless bastard, but at least there was a purpose to most of what he did. King Gerrit, he's a monster."
"Great," Hal thought. "My mother and sister are held prisoner by a monster, and my brother seems determined to join them." Hal ripped a page from his journal and scribbled a note on it.
"Mr. Cordray, I may have the information you are looking for. I'll be at the Golden Horn each evening between 6 and 9. A friend."
It was a laughably transparent ruse, but it might make Robert curious enough to show up. He handed it to Bellamy.
"If you could leave this with the duty officer at the garrison house, I'd appreciate it. I'll cover some of the taverns around here, and we'll see if I can lure him out of hiding."
Bellamy nodded, tucking the note away.
"I'll do that, Captain. I just want to say, I'm glad you're not dead."
Hal laughed.
"Not yet." "Be careful, all right? I hope we both live to see the day that I can fight under your command again."
"Or I can fight under your command." Hal stood and embraced his friend.
"I hope there will come a day that we can quit fighting and share a beer without looking over our shoulders."
Chapter 28. Taking the Bait. For the next 2 nights, Hal had his dinner in the common room of the Golden Horn, watching the comings and goings through the door. He'd chosen that place because it was a busy tap room, the food was good, and it wasn't where he was staying. The only downside was that it did seem to attract a lot of blackbirds, who dined and drank in noisy flocks all evening long. It was hard to sit there nursing a drink when his father was at White Oaks preparing to march on the capital. Alyssa Gray was on her way across the Indio, and who knew how far the enemy had advanced in the north. He couldn't even distract himself by reading, because he had to keep his eye out for his quarry. He was about to call it a night for the second time when he saw a familiar figure shoulder his way into the tavern, glance around the room, and saunter up to the bar. Robert ordered a cider, sipped it, then scanned the room once more. He leaned in and exchanged a few words with the tapsman, who nodded toward Hal in his corner. Robert slipped him some coin, took a long pull on his cider, flirted with the serving girl, then strolled over to Hal's table.
"Is this seat to... What are you doing here?" he hissed. "Have a seat," Hal said, shoving the chair out with his foot, "and tell me how you managed to misplace the good sense you were born with."
For a moment, he thought his little brother might refuse, but Robert finally slumped into the chair and banged his tankard down on the table.
"I don't need your help," he growled. "Go on back to White Oaks."
"Oh, I'm going back there tomorrow, and you're going with me. If I can find you, the King's Guard can too. Every thane on the council has spies and operatives here in town, trying to get to the King's hostages. Why do you think you'll succeed when they haven't in 3 months of trying?"
"Because nobody'd expect me to come looking."
"Right. They wouldn't expect it, because they know you spring from a long line of smart people."
Hal leaned toward him.
"Look, nobody wants to free our mother and sister more than me, but this is not the right way to do it. King Gerrit said that if father's armies lay siege to the city, he'll hang the families from the parapets."
Despite his bravado, Robert's voice quivered a little.
That thought, Hal had to admit, was a punch to the gut. It was one more reminder of how impossible it would be to forge an alliance with the North to fight back against the Empress.
"Doesn't sound like the new king is much of an improvement over the old one," he said. Father won't listen to me. He's going to attack anyway. He says we can't give way to that kind of pressure, and he won't lift a hand to save them.
Do you think he wants to see Mother and Harper hurt?
Hal waited, and Robert finally shook his head. Giving in won't help them. Even if the Thanes flat out surrender, Jarrett will execute Father and the others, and probably us too, because he knows we'll come back for revenge. He'll confiscate the estates and fill his treasuries, and he still won't free the hostages.
Robert scowled down at the table.
So that's it. We give up.
No, Matalons never give up. But we don't get drawn into a battle we can't win.
As he said this, Hal was a little amazed to hear his father's words coming out of his own mouth. And it seemed a bit hypocritical after his boneheaded moves in Fortress Rocks and Delphi.
Well, he thought, maybe my brother can benefit from my bad experience. Somebody ought to. After another minute or two of sulking, Robert nodded.
All right, he said. I'll come with you. Nobody's responded to my inquiries but you anyway.
Fortunately for you. Robert drew a deep breath, then blew it out.
Isn't there anything we can do?
We can hope that King Jarrett is smart enough to know that if he takes action against the hostages, there can be no reconciliation, ever. This civil war won't end until he's dead, or we are.
Hal stood. Now, where are you staying?
We should go get your things and both move somewhere else. We'll leave in the morning. Our luck can't last forever.
Robert drained the rest of his cider and stood, pulling his cloak from the back of his chair.
It's just a few blocks down, close to Citadel Hill.
When they walked out into the spring night, Hal still felt no need for a cloak, though the air was moist, promising rain. You've grown tougher during your time in the north, he thought. They hadn't gone more than a block down the darkened street when Hal heard the thud of boots on cobblestones and the familiar hiss of swords sliding from their scabbards. Hal and Robert put their backs to a building and drew their own swords, only to find themselves facing a ring of steel.
"Stand down, in the name of the king,"
one of the swordsmen said, "or we'll gut the pair of you."
Robert broadened his stance, lifting the tip of his blade, and Hal knew he had visions of fighting his way out. His little brother was a devil with a sword, and he'd draw plenty of blood before he went down, but there was no doubt about the outcome. Hal put a hand on his arm.
"Lower your blade," he said. "Remember what I said about being drawn into a battle we can't win."
"That sounds like wise advice, Mr. Cordray, is it? I do hope you'll take it."
Someone stepped forward, raising a lantern so that it shone down into Hal's face, all but blinding him. The man was tall, slender, dressed in the black of the king's guard.
"Blood of the martyrs," he muttered. "What have we here?"
The officer's voice was faintly familiar, but Hal couldn't place it immediately. He turned to his men.
"Disarm them and bind their hands."
The blackbirds complied, collecting the brothers' swords and chaining their wrists. The officer handed the lantern off to one of the blackbirds, so, once Hal's eyes adjusted, he could finally see his face. It was Lieutenant Destin Carn, the king's spymaster. Son of Hal's nemesis, General Merrin Carn. The situation had rapidly gone from bad to worse. Hal opened his mouth to speak, but Carn raised a hand to stop him.
"Please," he said. "It's beginning to rain. We'll talk later."
He turned to the commander of the Blackbirds.
"Take them to Newgate. Put them in the Airy." "Newgate? But—"
Now Carn's voice turned deadly cold.
"Was there something you didn't understand about that order, Sergeant? Levesque, is it?"
The
The way he said it, he was taking down names.
No, sir, it's just that it's unusual to... Did I ask for your opinion?
Levesque reddened.
No, sir, but...
Then why are we still standing here in the rain? Now go. Set a close guard on them and make sure that they are well provisioned and comfortable. I'll hold you personally responsible if they are not in good condition for interrogation.
Yes, sir.
Levesque turned to his men.
Bring them and follow me.
Carne turned with a swirl of his cloak and stalked off down the street in the other direction until he was lost in the darkness between the street lamps.
Do you know who that was?
Robert said into Hal's ear as they marched down the narrow street.
That was Dustin Carne, the king's spymaster. At least, I assume he still is, under the new king.
Carne? But that's...
This is his son. He was in Delphi for a while. I don't think you ever met him.
Oh. A few more steps, and then...
Have you heard of Newgate?
Robert whispered, trying to sound nonchalant. Hal nodded.
I've heard of it, but I don't know much about it.
What he knew about it was mostly rumors, and mostly discouraging. Newgate was the prison used by the King's Intelligence Service for prisoners thought to have valuable information that needed extracting, or political prisoners too valuable to mingle with the general prison population. He tried to lighten the situation by saying,
Well, you've been trying to get more information about the King's prison. Now we'll see it for ourselves.
I'm sorry, Hal, Robert said.
Don't worry,
Hal said, though he actually had plenty of worries. How was it that he'd ended up leaving one prison, only to end up in another? And he had a feeling that this one would be worse. Chapter 29 Captives. When Liss awakened, she was immediately sorry. Everything hurt. Her head, her back, her arms and legs. She was one big mass of bruises, and one of her arms seemed to be immobilized, strapped to her side. Worse, she was aware of an unpleasant sensation, as if the world was rocking under her.
I must have taken a really hard blow to the head, she thought, fighting back nausea.
The last she remembered, she'd been on the beach near Chalk Cliffs, trying to keep the busker out of the hands of the Empress Celestine.
"You're awake," Brion said. His anxious face came into view. "How do you feel, Your Highness?"
She propped up on her elbow.
"I feel horrible. Somebody needs to put me out of my misery."
"There's a lot of rum around, if that's appealing," Brion said.
"No," Liss said sharply. She lay back down, waiting for the world to stop spinning.
Where are we?
We're aboard the Empress's flagship, Brion said. The Siren.
Now that he'd mentioned it, she could hear the wooden hull creaking and complaining all around them.
Damn, Liss muttered. Another bloody gutter-strumming boat.
Looks that way.
I assume we're underway.
He nodded.
We're a day out.
So, I guess there's no swimming back.
Liz tried to laugh, but it was so painful that tears came to her eyes. More than one rib cracked, probably.
How about some water?
Brion said.
Hang on.
Liz took one breath, then another, getting ready.
All right, she said. I'm going to sit up. And I apologize in advance if I spew all over you.
Turnabout is fair play, I guess, Brion said.
Happily, she managed to sit up, and there was no spewing.
To her surprise, she was actually lying in a bed, in a fairly plush cabin with a tiny round window that displayed an angry gray ocean. Brion had shed the filthy clothing he'd worn in their small boat and was dressed plainly but finely in a white linen shirt and loose drawstring breeches. He'd washed his hair so that the gold streak stood out. Despite his plain clothing, he resembled a demigod out of stories, one of those beings with one foot in the human world, the other in the divine. When Lys looked down at herself, she saw that her blood-mucked uniform was gone, replaced by a white silk gown. She wondered who'd done that, and decided she didn't really want to go further with that investigation. Brion brought her a cup of water, and then perched at the foot of the bed, drawing his knees up and wrapping his arms around them.
"What's going on?" she whispered. "Are we prisoners or what?"
"We are guests," Brion said dryly. "The Empress is really sorry about losing her temper on the beach."
He stopped, cleared his throat, and swallowed hard.
"She's eager to make amends."
From the expression on Brion's face, he wasn't buying what she was selling.
"Why am I here?" Lys asked. "Why am I still alive?"
Brion hesitated.
"I think she likes you," he said finally. "She likes that you're not afraid to fight back."
"Did you tell her who I am?"
Brion smiled slantwise.
"You're Captain Gray," he said, "an officer in the Islander Army."
"Ah," she said.
She wished he'd used a less well-known name, but at least he didn't name her the heir to the throne.
"I'm sorry about your friend. I wish I could have been of more help."
"At least you had better weapons than me. I had a flute. Music is no kind of match for that."
"I wasn't all that successful with a bow," Lys said. "Don't feel bad. Anyway, as long as we're saying sorry, I'm sorry I didn't jump out of the boat when you told us to."
"Me too."
"So, what's this all about? Do you have any idea?"
"It has to do with my mage mark," Brion said. "That's all I know."
"So she didn't tell you what it's for, or what it means?"
He shook his head.
"Maybe there'll be a big reveal when we get where we're going," he said. "I guess the Empress put the word out that she was looking for people like me. Aubrey heard there was a reward on offer, and split on me."
"Was Aubrey your sweetheart?"
Lys knew the question was out of line, but found herself asking it anyway. Brion drooped a little, like a flower in need of water.
"I guess sweetheart is too strong for what we had going," he said. "But I thought at least she was my friend."
"From what I heard, she didn't know what the Empress's intentions were," Lys said.
"Obviously, she didn't know the Empress meant to burn her alive."
"You know what I mean. She didn't know what Celestine wanted with you."
"Maybe," Brion said. "But it's no excuse. It's like when that cove hired me to wait for you on a street corner in Southbridge. I guess I could claim that I didn't know what he intended. He never came out and said it. But looking back, I had to know he was up to no good. But I did it anyway."
"We've all done things we regret," Lys said, thinking she had too many to count. "All we can do is try to do better going forward."
"Maybe. I just don't know."
He paused, sliding a look at her.
"Do you think Talbot and the others will come after you?"
"Sasha will come,"
Lys said, without a shred of doubt, remembering the look on the Grey Wolf's face the night of the failed escape.
"She will come."
if she's still alive.
I think you're right, Brian said. She's formidable.
He sighed. Will they even know where to look?
I tried to leave a message on the beach, Liz said. I hope they can figure it out.
I hope they hurry, Brian said. I've got a very bad feeling about this.
For what it's worth, Liz said, I misjudged you, and I'm sorry.
No, Brian said, you didn't misjudge me. All those bad things you thought, they were true. I could justify anything as long as it led to another it. I lied to everyone. Myself, most of all.
Don't be so hard on yourself, Liz said. It was odd to be in the position of consoling someone who'd led her into an ambush. If I were picking villains in this, you wouldn't be high on the list.
I'd be on it, though. You were the one who forced me to get off the leaf. I never could have done it on my own. I don't know how much time I have left, but I'm glad to be clean, and I hope I can make you glad that you saved me.
Liz felt her cheeks heating. I'm already glad, Brian. Since we're in this together, I hope we can be friends. She extended her hand, and Brian took it. Chapter 30. In the Wake of the Empress. Cass slowly circled over the city of chalk cliffs, losing altitude with each circle he made. The air was still thick with smoke, thick, acrid fumes that burned Jenna's eyes and made her cough.
Bad air, Cass said. Stinks.
I know. At least it might make us harder to see.
Cass and Jenna would be hard to see if we fly to the mountains.
Cass disapproved of Jenna's interest in this broken, fuming city. He was happy that the big guns on shore had quieted, at least.
That's low enough, I think. Just keep circling a minute.
The ships that had been lying out of sight of land had come in now, and were unloading soldiers and horses onto the shore. The city was a charred ruin, but the harbor was a hive of activity. The warning they'd delivered had been too little, too late.
Why, horse people, want to live in burned city?
I don't think they plan to stay long, Jenna said.
Leaning down over Cass's shoulder, she studied the ships anchored in the harbor, looking for the three-masted ship with the siren figurehead. Jenna's eyesight was sharper by far than that of anyone else of her species, but not nearly as sharp as a dragon's.
"Do you see the ship that chased the ship we burned?"
Cass swept back and forth, twice, then made a larger circle, soaring past the white cliffs with the now silent guns and out over the ocean beyond the bay.
There.
Are you sure?
Cass snorted flame and smoke, vexed that she would ask that question. As they drew closer, Jenna could see that the dragon had called it right. While the other ships were dropping anchor in the harbor, this one was sailing east under full sail.
That's interesting, Jenna said. The armies are staying, but this ship seems to be going back home. Go high, but keep them in sight, all right?
With a few lazy wing beats, Cass gained altitude so that the ship below, on the dark water, resembled a tiny toy boat trailing a thread-like white wake. Jenna debated what to do. It was unlikely that a girl and a dragon could drive an army from chalk cliffs, though they could do plenty of damage. They could fly back west over the backbone of mountains and try to find the capital in the north and warn the northerners. But if Jenna lost sight of the ship, she might never find it again. If she meant to make good on her promise to seek vengeance on the Empress who had taken so much from her, now would be the time to do it.
A ship at sea is highly vulnerable to an aerial assault, particularly a sneak attack. If only they knew for sure that the Empress was aboard, they could reduce it to a smear of ash on the waves. Yet she and Cass had been training for months, so they would be ready to cross the Indio and confront the Empress in her lair. As Cass put it,
"Burn the nest, kill the hatchlings, claim the hoard."
Jenna had studied the map she'd stolen from the temple library at Fortress Rocks, tracing a path from shore to shore, past the script that said, "Here there be dragons." There weren't any resting points for a dragon between the Seven Realms and the shoreline of Karthus. It would be a challenge, even though Cass used very little energy when they were soaring.
"What do you think, Cass?" she said. "Are we ready for this? Do you want to follow them home?"
"Fish in the ocean?"
"Yes," she said, resting her cheek against his hot shoulder. "We can fish in the ocean."
Without replying, the dragon turned northeast and put on speed, following the wake of the Empress's flagship across the dark northern sea. Chapter 31 Going for Broke. To Hal's surprise, their quarters in Newgate Prison were reasonably comfortable, at the top of one of the towers of the palace's perimeter wall. Even more surprising, he and Robert were housed together, when common practice was to isolate the subjects of interrogation, to make them more pliable, and to prevent them from comparing notes and working up a story. Their guards were a cut above the usual as well, which had its pros and cons. They lacked the random cruelty and greed so often displayed by those in the trade. But they were strict, businesslike, impossible to chat up or bribe. Robert was a born charmer, but he got nowhere with them when he asked if the Madelon ladies were housed in the same building, or if they wanted to put a little money on a game of nicks and bones. A day passed, and nobody put them to the question, or took them to the gallows or the block. Hal wondered if King Jarrett had sent word to his father that he now held two more Madelons, arrested for spying, and invited him to the execution. Perhaps the king hoped that might prompt a bloodless surrender. Maybe he was waiting for an answer before he took further action against them. Hal knew how his father would answer, and when. He would answer in the time it took his armies to march from Temple Church to Arden's Court. Hal and Robert wouldn't survive, but neither would the king. Meanwhile, no doubt the Empress was marching.
"Look on the bright side, Halston."
Hal couldn't find the bright side of this situation by torchlight. That same night, just as Hal was deciding whether to lie awake in his bunk or worry upright in a chair, he heard a terse exchange of greetings outside the door, and then the bolts sliding back. Robert pushed to his feet and stood, hands fisted. Hal closed his book and waited. The door opened to reveal Destin Carn. He spoke a few quiet words to the guards outside, then entered, closing the door behind him. He swiveled around to face them, looking them up and down. He no longer wore the black of the king's guard. He had changed into rich but subdued court dress, like a snake that had slipped from one skin into another. Whatever colors he wore, he was dangerous. It was easy to forget that he was a mage on top of everything else. But then, his hand inside his coat, he walked the perimeter of the room and began murmuring charms. Hal and Robert looked at each other. Was the spymaster locking them in, or soundproofing the room, or what? Did he mean to put them to the question right then and there? Finally, Carn settled into the broad stone windowsill and extended his long legs in front of him. He crossed his legs at the ankles, the heels of his fine boots resting on the floor.
"Hello, Captain Matalon and Corporal Matalon," he said, sounding amused.
That answered one question. The spy master knew who they were.
"You're a long way from Delphi. Wait, isn't one of you supposed to be dead?"
He rubbed his chin, then pointed at Hal.
"You, I think."
Robert said,
"My brother has nothing to do with this. He just came to fetch me home. Let him go, and I'll tell you everything I know."
"Corporal, that is a brave thing to say, and exceedingly generous, but it's no way to begin a negotiation, much less a conversation. For one thing, between the two of you, your brother is the more valuable prisoner, being more dangerous to the crown. For another, I have no doubt that, if I asked you properly, you would tell me everything you know anyway, and wish that you had more to say."
"You mean to torture us, then?"
Robert folded his arms.
"I don't care what you do to me. I won't tell you anything."
"You would do well not to issue me a challenge,"
Karn said, tilting his head back, as if he were just a little bored by the situation.
"You don't want to arouse my competitive spirit."
"Lieutenant," Hal said, "could I speak with my brother a moment?"
Karn waved his assent, and Hal pulled Robert into the far corner.
"Did you mean it when you said you were sorry you got me into this?"
"Of course I am, but then could you shut up before you get us into more trouble than we're already in?"
Robert shot a look at Karn, then leaned in close and whispered,
"Hal, listen, we can take him. I know we can, and then..."
"He's a mage, Robert. We wouldn't get within 10 feet of him. If he questions us, he'll use magic on us. I'd like to think I could resist it somehow, but I have no idea if that's possible. Why don't we find out what he wants? Don't say no before he asks the question. When it comes to answers, I'll speak for both of us. Is that clear, Corporal?"
"Yes, sir."
Robert stared straight ahead.
"I'm so damned glad I'm not 14 anymore," Hal thought,
looking back from the high ground of 18. He led the way back and sat on the edge of his bunk, his hands resting on his knees.
"What is it you want to know, Lieutenant?" he said.
Karn gazed at Hal a moment, as if he could penetrate all the way to the bone.
"You seem to be very hard to kill, Captain," he said. "My father has some skill at killing, and yet he has tried and failed 4 or 5 times that I know of, maybe some others that I missed. I'm wondering if you can explain it."
Hal couldn't have said what he'd expected, but it certainly wasn't that. He could feel the pressure of Robert's stare.
"Can I explain why he's trying to kill me? Or why he's failed? My father has never needed much of an excuse to kill people, and I can think of several reasons he'd want to kill you."
Karn shook his head.
"No, I'm wondering how you've managed to survive this long."
Hal shrugged.
"My luck can't hold forever."
He gestured, taking in their prison cell.
"Obviously."
"That's just it," Karn said. "I think it's more than luck. For instance, any reasonable person would say that your situation now is hopeless. Yet I have no doubt that you will find a way to survive this too. I think you must be more clever and resilient than I ever gave you credit for."
It was an odd sort of compliment. Should I be thanking him? Hal wondered. Or is he flattering me, suggesting that if I turn traitor, he'll stay the executioner? When Hal didn't respond, the spymaster sat up and planted his feet firmly on the floor.
"You survived the fall of Delphi, when few of your fellow soldiers did, and now you've miraculously escaped and come back to us.
Either you are favored by the gods, or you have an extraordinary talent. Or is there another explanation? Hal was ambushed by a rush of anger. What was he suggesting? That he'd given the city up?
Is that what this is about? Does the king think I betrayed Delphi to the Fells? Is that the excuse your father is using?
He snorted.
No. I've been fighting under the Red Hawk since I was 11 years old. I've been nothing but loyal, and this is how I'm repaid, with suicide missions, assassination attempts, and accusations of treason. No, Lieutenant, I'm not proud of surviving, and I'm not proud of losing. I have been a good soldier, the best I could be, and that is all.
Hal clenched his fists.
So you tell me, why is your father, my commanding officer, out to get me?
By now, Robert was staring at him with a mixture of admiration and alarm. Hal sat back, breathing hard, thinking, this mage is good at what he does. After lecturing Robert, I've already said more than I'd planned on. Karn didn't seem at all put off by Hal's heated response. If anything, he seemed amused, almost delighted.
Exactly. I always saw you as more of a hero type than a traitor type.
He leaned in close and said, My father despises heroes. He thinks that honor is a sign of weakness, and treachery is just another tactic. That's where you made your mistake. Hal and Robert exchanged glances. What was this? Was Karn playing good lieutenant against bad general? Karn seemed to be waiting for some kind of response. When it didn't come, he said,
I will concede that you are a hero who knows how to survive. And yet, here you are, walking into a trap. So uncharacteristic. It doesn't fit together. And when things don't fit together, it makes me curious. This does not come from the king or my father. It comes from me.
Maybe I'm not as smart as you think I am, Hal thought. But as he looked at Karn, at the eagerness in his eyes, at the intensity in his posture, Hal got the impression that the lieutenant was sending a message that he hoped Hal would hear and respond to, that he was looking for something in him. An ally? No, people like him don't have allies. They have chess pieces they move on the board. Still, I've got nothing to lose, he thought. He and Robert were already prisoners of the crown, subject to execution as traitors and spies. At least he could sieve out some bits of truth that would be harmless to divulge.
Fair enough, he said. Here's the truth. I am here because I was taken prisoner when Delphi fell. I was in Delphi when I learned about King Gerard's death. The Wolf Queen asked me if I thought the death of the king might mean a new relationship between our realms. After 25 years of war, that sounded appealing to me.
He looked Karn in the eye.
Does that make me a traitor?
Not at all, Karn said. You would find many allies on the Thane Council.
He pressed the tips of his fingers together.
You actually spoke to the Queen in the North?
Hal noticed that the spymaster did not call her the witch, or the demon, or the harlot, which was a point in his favor, or a testament to his ability to play both sides.
Yes. What is she like?
He took a breath, then added,
Most importantly, what does she want?
As you can imagine, she is tired of war. She's suffered many losses. The Northerners claim that Arden has been sending assassins into the Queendom and murdering people.
He looked into Karn's eyes.
Is that true?
Karn didn't flinch, didn't deny, didn't look surprised.
That's possible, he said, frowning.
though I don't have direct knowledge of it, and by all rights I should. He paused. Will she surrender, do you think? Hal didn't hesitate. She will not surrender. Never. She will fight to her last breath. Karn nodded, as if this didn't surprise him either. Hal wondered how much of this he already knew through his network of eyes and ears.
"What about King Jarrett?" Hal said. "Do you think he would be open to making peace?"
"With the Thanes or the Queen?"
"Both."
Hal was a little amazed to be sitting in a jail cell in Arden talking politics with the king's chief spy and enforcer. Karn rubbed his chin.
"I must say that the Queen in the North has made an odd choice of diplomat."
"I'm not here representing Queen Rhaesa," Hal said, his temper rising once more. "I came to the capital to try to keep my brother from getting himself killed or captured."
He could feel the heat of Robert's glare and ignored it.
"And I came home to make a case for ending the civil war, so that we can join with the Fells against a foreign power that threatens both of us."
"Hold on," Karn said, shaking his head. "You've lost me now. What foreign power?" "After my capture in Delphi, I was moved to more secure quarters in Chalk Cliffs. I was there when the port was attacked by armies fighting for the Empress Celestine, known as the Empress in the East."
Up to then, Karn had displayed the face of a sharp, distant, detached, and all but unreadable. Now Hal saw a flicker of something in those hazel eyes, something that told him that young Karn had heard of the Empress, and that this news shook him to his core. Hal stiffened, his heart thrumming. What did the spymaster know about the Empress? Could Arden have investigated this invasion after all? If so, why would Karn be surprised? It was only a momentary cracking of the facade, and then Karn had his game face back on.
"What makes you think that it was the Empress who attacked? Were they flying her banner?"
"I wouldn't recognize her banner if I saw it," Hal said. "I interrogated one of their pickets. He said they sailed for the Empress Celestine. Then, after the city fell, I..." "Hang on. They've taken Chalk Cliffs?"
The spymaster's voice was sharp as a blade.
"Aye," Hal said. "They did. The Northerners never had a chance. The town is in ruins, everyone in it slain or carried off as slaves, unless some were able to escape to the west."
"And yet you got away?"
"During the confusion, I was able to escape by boat through the Watergate with some others."
"They didn't have you locked up?"
Suspicion glittered in Karn's eyes once again.
"They did, but when it was clear that the city would fall, they let me go. They had no interest in offending a member of the Thane Council. They know they need allies."
Hal waited for Karn to interrupt again, but the spymaster said nothing, only scowled and tapped his fingers on the window ledge.
"So, as I was saying, after the city fell, they began unloading horses and equipment and wagons. Ships were coming and going like buzzards to a corpse. It wasn't a hit-and-run for plunder. It looks like they intend to stay and conquer the Fells, maybe the entire empire."
Now Karn rose and began pacing back and forth.
"Why would she attack Chalk Cliffs?" he murmured. "That doesn't make any sense."
It seemed as if the spymaster was having a conversation with himself, with Hal and Robert as onlookers. Hal had expected skepticism, dismissiveness, and doubt. He had not expected this immediate recognition of the danger posed by the invaders from across the Indio.
"Well, he is a spymaster after all. It is his job to know things that others don't."
"Rumor has it that the Empress has made an agreement with Arden," Hal said. "Her armies attack in the north, freeing Jarrett's armies to subdue the Thanes."
Karn shook his head briskly.
Gerard was trying to form an alliance with the Empress, but it fell through. There was no agreement.
Are you sure?
Now Karn stopped and turned, folding his arms.
I am sure, he said flatly. I would know. You missed the attack on Chalk Cliffs, Hal said.
Karn's scowl transitioned to a rueful smile.
I did. There was another prisoner who escaped with me, Hal said. He claimed that the Empress attacked the city because she was after him.
She was after him? Karn went still.
Who was this prisoner? What was his name?
He called himself Brion de Tarvos, Hal said.
Tarvos?
Karn gripped the front of Hal's shirt, pulling him closer so they were eye to eye.
What did he look like?
Why was the spymaster so agitated?
He was maybe 16 or 17 years old, with red-gold hair. He said he was a street musician, a busker.
Red-gold hair. Karn released his hold on Hal's shirt. His expression mingled relief and dread, which Hal would have thought was impossible.
Did he explain why he thought the Empress was after him?
Had the busker ever explained? Hal recalled what Talbot had said.
When he saw that ship coming, he was terrified. I'd stake my life on it. When he told us to get out of the boat, he was trying to save the rest of us.
He shook his head. He never said, but it was clear that he was scared to death.
Was this busker a mage? Was there anything magical about him?
Hal shook his head, knowing these questions were springing from some private knowledge that the spymaster had.
Bear in mind that I can't see magic on a person, and I didn't spend much time with him.
The wheels were turning behind those shadowed eyes.
Where is he now, this busker?
Hal shook his head.
I don't know for sure, but we believe the Empress took him aboard her ship and is sailing back home.
Hal paused, waiting for more questions, but Karn said nothing, only stared down at his hands, a muscle working in his jaw. Finally, he spoke.
Can they do it, do you think?
Can who do what?
Can the Empress's forces conquer the Empire?
Hal shrugged.
I've never seen fighters like these. Fearless, fast, strong, completely unafraid of death.
Now Karn finally looked up.
Can they do it? He repeated, an edge to his voice. I want to know what you think, Captain. I suppose it depends on how many more soldiers she can bring to the fight. Let's assume that her resources are limitless,
Karn said with a sour smile.
Then she will almost certainly win, if we remain fractured as we are. For 25 years, my father did everything in his power to prevent another civil war. He always said that was a war where everyone loses. Now we're looking at another civil war in Arden, and we're still at war with the Fells. Our coffers are empty, and we have sacrificed an entire generation of young men that we sorely need now. We should have spent this time consolidating our hold on the Downrealms, building roads, and demonstrating to them the advantages of being part of the Empire. Instead, we've been pouring treasure into this useless war. The Downrealms have been on their own for so long that many of them have forgotten that they answer to us. Who could blame them if they decided to cast their lots with Celestine?
Hal caught a flicker of movement out of the corner of his eye, Robert shifting from foot to foot, reacting to the longest speech he'd likely ever hear his brother make.
My opinion? Hal went on. If we cannot end this war with the North and join together against the Empress, she will come for us. She will win, and we will deserve it.
Karn nodded, and Hal got the impression that the spymaster agreed with his assessment.
I know you are interrogating me, Hal said, but I have a question for you. You're wondering if King Jarrett would be open to making peace with the Thanes for the common good.
Karn raised an eyebrow.